All right. Let's jump into this thing. Then we'll pray. Then we'll keep going. Let me just ask you a question. Have you ever noticed that more is not enough for very long? I mean, I know it's ancient history, but I haven't had a chance to really talk to you about Thanksgiving. It was like a week and a half ago. I know, but did anybody at Thanksgiving like overdo it? Okay, thank you. One honest person. Thanks for that. The Lord will bless you. I want to say hello to all of you that are at each of our sites at Grants Trail, Mid Rivers, Fenton, those of you joining us in the Hub and Overflow, those who are joining us online from all over the country, bunch of college students from different places, people all over the UK, but we have people in university in England and here in the States, the Caribbean, the Middle East. I just want to say, you know, welcome to all of you, but I'm going to ask it one more time. I'm going to give you a chance to be honest. Did anybody overindulge, overconsume, overdo it just a little bit? Did anybody else get to the end of that day and go, wow, I just became Fatty McPumpkin Pants? Anybody? Yeah, okay, so we go into it with such good intentions. I don't know what it was for you. Was it the dressing? Was it the potatoes? It's the pie for me. It's always the pie. It's always the pie. It's the holidays. I've got to have pie. But, you know, I'm not going to have like a whole piece because I don't want to play favorites. So just give me two half pieces because I need to try different pies. But then now I know which pie I really like. So now I got to go back for my first official piece of pie because the half pieces didn't really count. And I'm like a half step away from asking for gravy over my pecan pie because more always seems like it should be better until it isn't. Oh, and by the way, I'm not just talking about food. Like, I know, it's December now, and we're going, yes, great, but we've learned we're not going to get suckered into the lie of more. Not now, not this time. But will we? Because I want to suggest to you that you and I live in the empire of more. And never is that more obvious than, like, this month. I'm going to ask you to rebel with me against overdoing it and overconsuming and overindulging, and yes, here it is, overspending. And I know some of you are like, oh, this is where it gets all guilt trippy. No, it's really not. And I know you're worried and you forgot that's what we were talking about today, and so you came anyway, but it's okay. I'm just gonna ask you if you would. I promise that's not the way it's gonna work. It's just not. I mean, I'll try to be as blunt as I can about this. I'm not your nanny. I'm not your trainer, I'm not your accountant, and I'm not your mommy. I don't want to be any of those things. But I am your pastor, many of you, for many of you, at least one of your pastors, and I'm going to invite you to a different way of celebrating this Advent season, not because of a book or a global movement, just put all that to the side, but because this matters to God, and it'll matter to you, and it'll lead to things. It'll lead to things like joy and relief and laughter, and it'll surprise you. It really will. This is what you were made for. It's good. And by the way, we're going to have fun today while we're offended, okay? So we'll just get it all done at once. And then the end of the service is going to head someplace that you didn't think it was going to head. I promise you, this is what your soul craves. So you just hang in with me till the end. But right now, let's pray, and then we're going to jump into the story. I want to show you how all of these thoughts aren't just theoretical thoughts, but how they connect to the story itself. So would you pray with me? Father, I'm now coming before you, and I'm just so grateful for what you're doing in our midst. I'm so grateful for the stories that just keep flying around. I'm grateful, God. We don't deserve any of this. I love this season. I'm grateful for this season. But I'm also confessing to you that in my own life, and I feel it in others, there's like a layer of irritability that sometimes just cakes onto us. We have this deep longing in our bones. God, we want to praise you. We want to worship. But then we just get caught up in stuff. So help us today to hear your voice above all the crazy. Pull us in so close to your story that it actually starts to make sense to us and it changes us. Jesus, I believe you are Lord. I believe you are the Son of the Most High. And you are my Savior. So help us today. Amen. You know how you sometimes hear me say, you've got to enter the story, and that's what we're really going to do. When I talk about that, what I'm really saying to you is, will you get into the narrative? Will you get into the scriptures enough to where it's not just from afar, you actually understand it, you start thinking of it through a first-person perspective, some of the details, and it all starts firing up and becoming real to you. So if you get into the story, one of the things that you will find is that the first Christmas was not all cinnamon and snuggles. In fact, if you look at the Christmas narratives, which are principally found in the Gospels of Matthew and Luke, what you will find is that you get a real sense of danger. Like, there's some stuff going on. And the two characters that are at the center of this deal are faithful and they're courageous. Yes, they're all of that. But I will tell you that they've also, both of them, they have a little bit of a rebel in them. They really do. And the teenage girl that is at the very center of all of this, she's spunky. I mean, I know we think of her as sweet and loving and faithful. She's all of those things, humble, all of those things. But my Jewish friends would say she's got some chutzpah. You see, we're going to find out today that she kind of says things like, those who are in power are going to get tossed out. The empire that's in charge is going to get upended. Everything's going to change. I mean, these are the kinds of things that she says. And by the way, that kind of talk in those days would get you killed. It's subversive, it's dangerous, it's rebellious, but it's also full of hope and gratitude and worship. And I can't wait any longer. Let's get into it. If you have your Bibles, turn to Luke chapter 1. In the Gospel of Luke, so it's Matthew, Mark, Luke. In Luke chapter 1, it's the third book of the New Testament. We're going to pick things up when Mary, this teenage girl, and yes, she was in her mid-teens at best, most likely. She's engaged to a carpenter named Joseph. We're going to pick things up after she's heard news of a miracle to end all miracles. In fact, it's a miracle that has never happened again. She's now going to give birth in the most miraculous way to the angel refers to him as the Son of the Most High. Something is going to happen, but nobody believes it. So to get away from the harsh stares and the whispery gossip of her town where she was living, this little village of Nazareth up north, she now makes the 80 or so mile trek down to the hill country to visit a cousin of hers, Elizabeth, who's dealing with her own unexpected pregnancy, her own, this is a miracle. I was past childbearing years and whoo, this happened to me. So she's going to go be with Elizabeth. So you can kind of see there the track. And some people have said, well, why not the straight line? Why did they go out of their way? Because no self-respecting Jew in that day would walk through Samaria. That little thing that they're going around, that detour, that's Samaria. No Jewish person would walk through Samaria. They hated Samaritans. Nobody would do that until Mary's little boy grows up. And he walks right through the middle of it. And he sits down at a well, and that's a different story. She gets to the hill country. She gets to Elizabeth's house. She doesn't even hit it. Like, she hits the threshold. She barely gets in, and Elizabeth screams, "Blessed are you among women, and blessed is the child you will bear." You see, like, her next sentence, if we kept reading, is she calls that little baby in Mary's womb her Lord. God has clued Elizabeth in. The miracle has happened. Messiah is here, and Mary is carrying him in her womb. But when Mary hears those words, I think the first thing that came to mind was, finally, somebody believes me. I know it's outlandish, but you believe my miracle. Now Mary's grateful, and she cuts loose. "My soul glorifies the Lord, and my spirit rejoices in God my Savior, for he has been made mindful of the humble state of his servant. From now on, all generations will call me blessed, for the mighty one has done great things for me. Holy is his name. His mercy extends to those who fear him from generation to generation. He has performed mighty deeds with his arm. He has scattered those who are proud in their inmost thoughts. He has brought down rulers from their thrones, but has lifted up the humble. He has filled the hungry with good things, but has sent the rich away empty. He has helped his servant Israel, remembering to be merciful to Abraham and his descendants forever, even as he said to our fathers. There's so much here, so much here. Some of you will know this as Mary's song, because this is poetry. She may have said it. She may have sung it. We don't know. She probably said it. Some of you will recognize this by a more formal name, which is really just the Latin word at the beginning of this in the Latin translation. This is the Magnificat. That simply means to magnify, to tell the greatness of. And that's exactly what Mary is doing. She's telling the greatness of God. We're going to come back and look at this a couple more weeks. We're really going to talk about this at Christmas. But this is a huge moment here where she's declaring some things. And one of the questions that you might ask, in fact, I think you should ask these kinds of questions. How's a teenage girl pull that off? So that's about as beautiful as it gets. Are you sure somebody's not writing this in there for her? Well, first of all, a lot of those phrases are phrases that reach back to what we would call the Old Testament. It was the only scriptures she had. It was the Hebrew scriptures. And because of her upbringing and her traditional, her education, a young woman would have memorized certain chunks of the Hebrew scriptures. So she's reaching back and kind of putting all of this together. Besides, Luke doesn't say here that she improvised this. Luke doesn't say it was like, oh, wow, Elizabeth, okay, yeah, Luke, here, I got one for you. That's not what happened. Now, you remember I showed you that whole journey? She was probably a part of a caravan. She may have been on an animal, but she might have walked the whole way, which means this took days. Now, I want you to picture this young girl trying to make sense of everything that's happening to her. So there's the prophecies. There's this angelic thing. All of a sudden, I really do have a baby inside me. But wait, there are these scriptures, and there's this. And so she's humming, and she's thinking. Maybe she's singing. She's kind of putting it all together. It's making sense to her. And then Elizabeth gets excited, and she starts to worship back. And it's really cool stuff, and we'll keep talking about it. But what I want to do now is to jump down to the dangerous portion of this thing, because there are some dangerous, rebellious lyrics in this song, so to speak. In fact, what I want you to do right now is to just turn to some people around you, if you would, because as best I can tell, teenagers have always expressed their rebellion through songs, okay? So you just turn to some people around you and tell them, when you think of teenagers and rebellious music, what do you think of? Like, you just tell them this is a genre, this is a group, this is a whatever, just style, whatever you want to do. Just talk to each other for just a minute, and you tell them what comes to your mind with rebellious teenage music. Go ahead, tell them.
All right, that's quick. I just wanted you to just kind of sample each other a little bit. By the way, if you're visiting, we just do this. It just helps us to kind of connect with each other. Somebody here, tell me. Sites, if you've got answers, Hub, anybody else, feel free to just scream at me right now. I can handle it, okay? I mean, I can't hear you. So just, yeah, whatever you want to say. Great. So who?
The Who.
The Who. All right.
The Clash.
Say it again. Okay. The Ramones. All right. The Grateful Dead. Back row, what'd you say? The Jefferson Airplane. Anybody, like, not in the 60s want to talk? Or I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. But Twisted Sister, I heard. Yes. We're not going to take it anymore. Metallica.
Christian rock.
Is there such a thing? David Bowie. AC/DC. I heard rap. Somebody said rap. And they said it like rap. And its first cousin, hippity hop, whatever that hippity hop music is. I don't like that. So if you think about this for a second, man, I think of Kendrick Lamar and the passion and some of the rage that's in his stuff. Whew. I mean, Tupac and Biggie. Because we got to go East Coast, West Coast, right? And some of you going, I don't know what you're saying. It's okay. How about Elvis? How about the Coasters? The Coasters, you're like, what do the Coasters do? Yakety yak, don't talk back. There were people that were offended by that because it was a song about a teenager talking back to his parents. Of course, everybody remembers the Columbus Day riot. 35,000 people converged on a theater that could only fit 3,000. They had to call the police in, pull people out of there against their will. This was a tough day. This was a riot. You guys remember that? Yeah, I don't. It was in 1944. It was a Frank Sinatra concert. So please don't tell me that, oh, those teenagers today. Because teenagers have always used music to express their rebellion. I think this teenage girl's got some rebellion going on. What do you mean? In 1980, the government of Guatemala made it illegal to read the Magnificat out loud in public. Do you know why? Because they had surmised that if people start saying in public some of these things, and those who are on the edges and those who are out of, like, they're just out of hope, started to hear what God might do with the least of these and the humble and all of that, it might start a riot. I mean, look at it again. He has brought down rulers from their thrones, but has lifted up the humble. He has filled the hungry with good things, but has sent the rich away empty. Now, we're going to keep talking about this throughout the month, but through her son Messiah, tyrants are going to finally and forever be silenced. There will come a day when his kingdom is just like in charge of everything, and his kingdom will have no end. And by the way, she's saying all this in the past tense, like it's a done deal. When she's thinking of a king, just so you understand, when she's thinking of a king, she's thinking of Herod the Great, as he was known, and his boss was Caesar. But this Herod cat, he was something. When Mary says things like God will bring down rulers, I think she had someone in mind, and it was Herod who was the king of the empire of more. If you know anything about the history of Herod, he wanted more. He wanted more money, so there were more taxes. He wanted more building projects in his name. He wanted more control. He wanted more prestige. He wanted more everything, and he was horrible. He was a ruthless leader. He was a great politician. He would cut deals, like even with Rome. That's how he got to keep the title of king. He would give gifts as long as he could get a bigger gift back. He was married to 10 different women. They were all political benefits there. The one woman that he supposedly loved is the wife that he killed. He killed some of his sons because he thought they were too ambitious. When Mary says God's going to bring down rulers, she has someone in mind. You see, there's going to come an end to this empire of more. This is part of what Mary is saying here. She's basically announcing a revolution. Now, you want to talk about disturbing the peace. Mary says there's a new king in town. It's not Caesar. It's not Herod. It's Jesus. And that hasn't changed. Jesus is king, not Caesar, not Herod, not the powers of this world. And that means if you're a Christ follower, you're a Christian. Now, let me just help you with that. When I say Christian, I don't mean that like in some generic label sort of a way. If you've gotten to a place where this is personal to you, where you're not relying on religious habits and showing up at this church or any other church, but you've actually turned to Jesus and you accept his grace and his forgiveness, and this got personal for you, then the good news is this is your story and you get to celebrate this. But you're also being called to proclaim that Jesus is king, not Caesar, not Herod. You see, he's still upending the empire of more. But gang, this is where some of you are going to get nervous with me, but I am not now about to lecture you about your gift giving. There's so many different ways that you can do this. All I'm asking you to do is to prayerfully consider what you're expecting of your gifts, what you're expecting of all of this. Talk to God about it. Talk to your family about it. That's it. That's all. That's really, that's the point here. There's no formula. By the way, there are apparently a whole bunch of you that are already figuring some of this out, and you're jumping in on this. And I want to thank you for all of the stories and the comments from this past week. And this is not me speaking ministerially. We can measure this. We now have like thousands of you since last week have like jumped into this thing and invited others to jump into this thing with you. And like, we had a podcast this Thursday night, and apparently a whole bunch of you showed up for this thing because it was here locally, and we had like college students gathering around coffee shops at Mizzou and other places, Truman State, and people around the country that were joining us. And it was really, really quite a thing. So many of you have jumped in on this, but some of you haven't. Some of you, it's new. Maybe this is your first time here. Some of you have been hearing some of this, and you're kind of a little, I don't know, you don't want to do this. Because at this point, you're just thinking, oh, man, here we go. Please don't think that we're saying we are anti-gift giving. Because as soon as we get to this particular topic, some of you, it's like, oh, boy, he's going to get all ramped up. I've seen him do this before. Ho, ho, humbug.
We had two cans and a string between it. That was our cell phone. Apple Watch? I got an apple for Christmas and watched a worm crawl out of it, and I liked it.
Listen, I'm not going to go all Scroogey on you. Is it okay to give gifts at Christmas? Guys, easy question. Everybody try to answer. Is it okay to give gifts at Christmas? Of course, it's built into the story. There is a joy when you give. There's a joy when you receive. I mean, you see it with little ones. You see it with friends and with families and with parents, with people in love. You see it. But can we also admit that there is something else at play here, something that's trying to demand our attention and our allegiance? Is it possible for us to turn the tables on some of this craziness and still enjoy gift-giving and celebration and love and surprise and all those things that you're afraid you're going to lose if you jump into this with us? And I say, yes, yes, you can do this. It sounds like an impossible step, but the thought that could still change the world this week is spend less. I didn't say spend nothing, unless you should spend nothing. I just said spend less. There's no formula here. Somebody asked, well, can I, I've been saving because I want to give my kid a bicycle, and the best deal I could find was on Black Friday, and I got to save 30% on the exact bike. Is that wrong? We're not the gift police. That's between you and God. If it makes sense and you saved money, good for you. If you're expecting the right thing from that gift, if your child knows how to enjoy that gift, if it's in your budget, there's a radical idea. Do you have kind of a budget for spending this Christmas? Are you going to push against the spend, spend, spend thing? Some of you are like, yeah, but I don't like that whole idea of conspiracy, because that just feels weird to me. I mean, it's just when you say, I don't want to rebel, because conspiracy, advocate conspiracy, man, but I think you guys are a bunch of nut jobs when you say things like conspiracy. And I get it, because when you hear conspiracy, you start to think of, oh boy, he's going to start talking about crop circles and UFOs and wearing tinfoil hats to keep Alexa from reading our minds and giving it to the government. I mean, I get it. I'm familiar with conspiracy theories. That's not this. Let me try it this way. You can be a part of this conspiracy without being cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. Because conspiracy, by definition, is just joining together with people to push against something that you don't want to happen. But Greg, that's it. You're not making me feel better, because I don't want to be a part of a rebellion. I'm too. Rebellion is for young people. You're right. Why is that? Because when you're older, you've got more to lose. You got more to lose when you're older. You just do. You've got more at stake. You've got more in play. You've got more resources. You've got more expectations on you. And let's just say this out loud in each of our rooms. There are some of you that are, what's the term? Less than young, more than young, not young, old. That's the term. Some of you are old, and you know who you are, right? If not, the person next to you does. In fact, if you're sitting next to someone who qualifies, would you just, like, gently elbow them now, okay? Remember, gently, that whole brittle bone thing. We don't want anybody, like, cracking a rib. You notice how I'm making sure that I'm not near anyone who could elbow me? I know where I stand in this whole thing. My point is, when we start talking about this, I have young people that come up and say, ooh, I'm up for anything that'll stick it to the man. Wrong answer. But I have people on the other side who will say, I'm too old to change. I got too much to lose. You're not too old to change. And whatever is it that you think you're going to lose, boy, can I tell you what you're going to gain? In this podcast, we had a man. I loved his honesty. He texted in and said, okay, I think I want to do this, but how do I do this? Because I don't want to lose my status as the cool grandpa. I love that. I mean, I love his honesty, and I love his, that's like a new goal for me, to be the cool grandpa, okay? We have a lot to lose. I'll go on ahead and say this. This movement is harder than it was 12 years ago when we were a younger, smaller church, because we just have more to lose. It's a bigger risk for some of us.
But it's still the same thing, and it's still the same world. There's a research firm called SJ Insights that said, on an average, every day, if you factor out just brand exposure. Now, brand exposure means you're driving past somebody and you see the Nike swoosh. That's brand exposure. So you and I get bombarded with brand exposure to the tune of like between 5 and 10,000 brands every year. So factor all of that out. But what they say, on a regular day, you will be exposed to 362 ads. Online, email, radio, TV, 362 ads. Somebody else said, if you put them all together and condense them down, just put them together, that's almost 2 solid hours of ad exposure every day of your life. And that's not even Christmas. So let me ask you this. What are those ads saying to you? If you'll just buy this one thing, this Christmas, for her, for him, for you, for all mankind, Christmas will be the best Christmas ever. You'll be satisfied. That's the message. $1 trillion will be spent in the name of Christmas this year around the planet. I have no idea how much of that is on credit. I have no idea how much of that it pushes us deeper into debt. I will tell you that there was an article on CNBC a couple of weeks ago that said almost one in three Americans is carrying debt from last Christmas into this Christmas. Now, I'm not going to ask you to look around. I'm just going to ask you to do the math. In each of our rooms, one in three means there's a whole bunch of us that are going, no, it's one in one. I'm the one that's carrying debt from that Christmas into this Christmas. And you need to hear me. This is not a shameful message at all. This is liberating. Jesus is saying to you, I don't want you to celebrate my birthday by going deeper into the hole. Stop. I mean, this is such a good thing, and there are people who need to hear this and to celebrate this, and we'll champion this, and we'll help you with this. And then there are others who are going, but I'm not in debt, and I want to spoil my kids rotten. I want to give them everything I didn't have. Ooh, I understand the tug of that one. But can you ever give a child too much? Now, be careful before you answer, you parents and grandparents and really cool aunts and uncles. Let me ask it to you this way. What message do we send with all of this gift giving? That we love them! Wait, so what we're saying is the best way to express love is through the giving and receiving of expensive gifts. One of the guys on the team gave me this one. It's a classic quote from a classic show, The Office. Presents are the best way to show someone how much you care. It is like this tangible thing that you can point to and say, hey, man, I love you this many dollars worth. I know it's more complicated than that, but my point is, with out-of-control spending and over, like, giving, do we confuse our kids? Nobody likes surprising their family more than me. But even if you go back into the story, there was a moment when Joseph, in a dream, was warned by God, you got to get Mary and that little boy out of Herod's reach, because this king, he wants to destroy you. Now, I'm not trying to be overly dramatic, but maybe we need to be protecting our families and taking strategic moves to deal with this empire of more. King, I'm not, I promise you one more time, I love the idea of gift giving, but what do we teach our family, what do we teach our kids if the pile of presents around the tree is like 4 or 5 feet high? I keep confessing that I don't have this figured out, because I'll tell you what, in the early days, before we started AC, there were times that we just did this wrong. I don't know any other way to put it. In fact, I remember a couple of Christmases where that was the joke of, oh, look, they can't even open all their presents. They're so worn out. Look at that. They just went from one thing to the other. They didn't even play with it. And we were kind of proud of ourselves. What are we saying to our kids if it's like, yeah, don't enjoy this. There's just more, and there's more, and there's more. What are we saying to them? What happens when that child becomes a young adult or a not-so-young adult, and they discovered that this thing about more is a lie? In 1957, Kathleen Montague discovered the neurotransmitter known as dopamine. Now, initially, we thought it was the molecule of pleasure. I say we, like I was a part of the research team. We thought it was the molecule of pleasure. It turns out that there is something to that, but really a better way to describe it is there are two authors, and this is the name of their book. It really is more of the molecule of more. You see, what happens with dopamine is it does give you, it triggers a rush, it triggers a buzz, but the buzz isn't about having something. It's about the anticipation of, ooh, I could get this, ooh, this might happen. This is why, by the way, they explain that if you look at any modern casino floor plan, 80% of that casino's floor plan is dedicated to their moneymaker. It's the one that keeps the lights on and keeps giving money back to the people who own the casinos. 80% of the floor is devoted to slot machines, because you walk through and there's this dopamine rush of, I don't know, maybe this time, I don't know, maybe this time, baby needs a new pair of shoes. It's not about having, it's about the anticipation and the dream of getting. Now, fellas, this is where it gets personal, because the authors say, this is also why we men spent a lot of energy trying to be clever and cool and attentive and put together and nice and polite and prompt and all of those things while we were dating her. But once we married her, everything changed. It's not so much about what you have, it's about getting what you don't have. Here's how the writers put it. From dopamine's perspective, having things is uninteresting. It's only getting things that matters. And that blew me up when I read that. You see, the lie of dopamine is that there's a thrill, but it doesn't last. It triggers something, but then it's gone. And the world says, well, that's okay, here's more. That's okay, here's more. Have a piece of pie, want some gravy? If we're going to learn how to enjoy, and this is not about Christmas, this is wise living, people. You get to a place where you enjoy what you have. You have to transition from always acquiring more and settle in and go, no, this is good. I should enjoy this. Like relationally, if you want love to last, it's about paying attention and engaging and settling in and going, wait, I'm with you now. Wait, let's enjoy that. By the way, that's when serotonin and oxytocin and the endorphins kick in. These are the molecules of pleasure in the moment where you're just enjoying. It's not about anticipation. It's about now I'm settling in and enjoying what I have. Wait, did Greg just turn Christmas morning into a chemical reaction? No. But I am telling you, there are people who know about this, and there are strategies in play, and there are things where it's just like, no, it's just, what happens when a kid finally figures out that more isn't going to cut it? You see, if you want to raise your kids to be ready for the world, then help them with this. Help them to learn how to enjoy something now. Otherwise, it's just more this, more that, more dissatisfaction, more disappointment, more debt. You get the idea. Let's spend less and enjoy more. Now, I want to be really clear again on something. I want you to enjoy the rush of dopamine on Christmas morning. There is nothing more fun, I'll just say as a parent, than watching your kids with that anticipation. Can I go down the stairs, Daddy? Can I go down the stairs, Daddy? Can we do this? That's a great thing. I'm not scrooging you on that. But you've got to learn, and your kids have to learn, that it's more than just getting what I don't have. It's enjoying what I do have. The Apostle Paul didn't know a thing about dopamine. But look at what he says in his letter to the Philippians. I have learned to be content in all circumstances. I've learned to do this. Can you and I can learn how to do this? We can, and we all struggle. Every one of us will, I struggle with this. So the easiest thing to do when we struggle is to just keep score on each other. Because that'll distract me from my stuff. I'll just kind of goof on your stuff. Did you see what he got her for Christmas? That doesn't look like spending less to me. I wonder how much that family vacation cost them. You know, there are kids in Africa who need clean water. I wonder what this church pays for lights. See, wouldn't it be just horrible if what we did is we walked out of here and said, oh, we're just going to get all ugly and creepy and critiquing each other on this? That's not the point. So how do you do this? One more time, there's not a formula. This is your heart. Isaiah 55 says, why would you give your wages to something that won't satisfy you? This is between you and God and your expectations of your stuff. So pray, take the risk of going, God, where are we on this? Look at your budget. Where are we on this? And then talk to your kids. Talk to your family and say, hey, I think we're going to do this a little bit differently. Now, we're going to show you in a couple of ways in next week in particular and the week after that of how this all connects together. But, oh, my goodness. Like the cool grandpa that asked us, you know what we said to him? I think our first answer was, I don't know. My next answer was, whatever you do give them, talk to your kids, talk to your grandkids, but whatever you do give that grandchild, make it cool for sure, but make it something that the two of you do together. Because the coolest thing that kid could ever experience is hanging out with his grandpa. And by the way, any grandpa that is still listening to podcasts is already cool, okay? But that's what this is. It's just, I've learned to be, but kids are the ones that figure this out first. Kids are the ones that say, hey, I would like this gift, but can we give the rest of that to children who need water in Africa? They say it all the time around here. You talk about a revolution. I've learned to be content. You talk about countercultural. I have learned to be content. I am sniffing out where I'm demanding too much. I am picking up on when I'm anxious or when I'm irritable or when I have to have my own way. I'm beginning to sniff out when I'm the one that's so easily offended because it didn't go the way I wanted to. You see, part of what I'm doing is I'm sniffing out a lot of me. You want to do something rebellious with me this Christmas, this December? Let's vow. How many of you will vow with me? Don't even raise your hands, but how many of you will say, I am going to resist being overly consumeristic with everything? And gang, I'm not talking about money now. I'm just talking about a consumer, me-first mindset. It poisons our relationships with each other. It poisons our relationships at work, at school, your roommate, at the dorm, neighbors, even when we're driving. It's just, it's me, and it's my way, and it's my pace. It poisons how we do things here at church. It's always got to be my way, and I will demand my way. How about if we resisted being consumers and demanding it's got to be my way, and instead we became worshipers of the Son of the Most High? I'm asking you now, if you would, to resist overfilling your plate, overfilling your glass, overcommitting on your calendar, and overstuffing the presents under your tree. By the way, you know that's one of the reasons why we have these events that we're doing here, is to just try to make it easier for you. So the Aaron Schust concert tonight, that's just an opportunity for people to worship and to just kind of hang out. Okay, cool. That whole thing next week at Grant's Trail, the artisan market, I mean, I know the people at Grant's Trail are excited about this. They want to welcome everybody. Well, come on. But this isn't about us. I mean, we're not making money on this. This gives you a chance to hang out with some friends, for your kids to do something fun, to hear some really cool Christmas music, and watch this. You might get some very unique ideas for Christmas gifts, and some of the proceeds for those gifts are now going to go to the least of these, to people who are in need here locally. That's a win-win. But now let me say this here at the end. For some of you, you've politely endured this thing, but when you found out or you remembered that this was about spend less, you started just squirming, because for you, that's obvious. You're facing the toughest Christmas you've had in a long time. Spend less? What do you mean? I don't think I can spend anything. I want you to hear me. I've been thinking about you a lot. And I even think there's something for you in the middle of our little rebellion. I think we together, whether you have a lot or you have a little, I think we can lock arms and say, Jesus is king, not Caesar, not Herod. I think we can remember that God loved us so much that he sent his son. I think we can do that. I mean, great are you, Lord, and all the earth will sound your praise. My bones will sing. Ah, great are you, Lord. We can do this. You can go back. Forget the dopamine rush. You can go back to settling in and saying, this is what God has blessed me with: family, friends, health, education, opportunities, this church, the freedom of this country. I mean, you name it. Some of you are going, yeah, but I can't even find many of those things. I think go back to the first one. Your value in the eyes of God doesn't change. You are the beloved. His grace doesn't change. It can be yours. So now here we are at the end of this deal. We've baked a little time in. I want you to experience this. In fact, what I'm going to ask you to do is to just hang with me for a couple of awkward minutes before you rush back out to the craziness. I'm asking you, if you would, to spend less energy, less cranky words, less anxiety, less criticism, less complaining. I'm going to ask you to just spend less in so many different ways. So, Matt, you come on out, and he's just going to give us a gift here. And I'm going to try, if I can, to get us to a place where we just turn the volume down for just a minute before you go back out into a very loud world. Might be the most rebellious thing you do all week. Here's where we'll start. And I really am, just hang in there. I know some of you are like, well, why do you stress that at the end? Do you get paid by the minute? No, it's just, I just want you to experience this. And I'm going to steal this straight from Mr. Rogers. He's kind of on a roll these days. I mean, I know he's no longer with us, but a couple of documentaries. He's got a Tom Hanks movie coming out. But for some reason, I went back to his acceptance speech for his Lifetime Achievement Award this week. I don't know how my brain works, but I just went back and saw what he said to a whole bunch of people when he received an Emmy Award for all of his work. Now, I want you to think about this. He's looking at the entertainment industry, many of whom live in the Empire of More. And this sweet, humble man, I just watched what he did, and I went, I want to be that guy. Let's do it. He said, I want you just for 10 seconds, just 10 seconds, to think about the people that poured into you, that got you to the place where you are who you are right now. He said, I'll watch, I'll keep time for 10 seconds. So let's do that just for 10 seconds. I want you now to just think of the people who have poured into you, the people who really are one of the reasons that you are who you are right now, okay? I'll keep time. Now, some of us barely got started. It's okay. Why don't you keep thinking about that? In fact, some of you might get to a place where you pray about this now for just a minute, just a couple of minutes. Where you thank God. If you actually believe God hears prayers, then maybe you can just, God, thank you for this. But for others of you, honestly, and this is going to really surprise you, but for some of you, in a 21st century way, the way you're going to rebel, you might actually take your phone out right now. But Greg, you're telling me to slow down. I'm asking you to settle in and enjoy your gifts. So what you might do is you might start a text to one of those people and say, hey man, I'm at the end of my church service and I just need you to know I love you and we gotta get together. That'd be a good thing. Some of you, in just a minute, need to get up and walk across the room and thank somebody. Some of you need to just go, hey, I'm praying for you. Some of you need to walk across and say, will you pray for me? Some of you need to walk across the room and say, this thing between us stops now. I'm not spending precious energy on this. It stops now. Some of you are going to want to just listen to a couple of scriptures that pastors will read over you. And then this, and I'm done. High-tech way. If you want to be reminded this week to spend less, not money, but just spend less of all this other stuff, just text the word still to that number, and we'll leave that up there for a while. And sometime this week, you'll get a reminder or two, not about your money, not about your spending habits, but about being still and knowing that he's God and just not getting caught up in it. You won't know when it's coming. God will. King, I'm not very good at this sometimes. And the truth is, if you ask my wife, when I'm not very good at it, I get irritable and I get cranky and I get sucked into it again. when I remember and I stop. There's joy and there's laughter and there's peace and there's worship. That's what I want more of for me and you this Christmas.
Exalted among the nations, and I will be exalted in the earth. The Lord Almighty is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress.
Isaiah 40, 28 through 31. Don't you know, haven't you heard, the eternal and everlasting God, the creator of the whole world, never gets tired or weary. His wisdom is beyond understanding. God strengthens the weary and gives vitality to those worn down by age and care. Young people will get tired. Strapping young men will stumble and fall. But those who trust in the Eternal One will regain their strength. They will soar on wings as eagles. They will run, never winded, never weary. They will walk, never tired, never faint.
Some of you are going to want to come to the front where our pastors are and ask for prayer. Let's do that. But together, let's go into this season. Let's go into this week just a little bit differently than we thought we were going to go. Let's see what God does with that in our hearts and our families and our world. Thanks for being here. You're welcome to stay. You're welcome to go. You're welcome to come for prayer. Thanks.